We are starting the Mystic Pete Chronicles, and I'm Mystic Pete. Every week, through interviews with thought leaders, visionaries, and creatives, and stories, music, and humor, we'll do some deep ponders in this time of great change, and have some fun. If you'd like more information about today's guests, or to be interviewed for the show yourself, I'm at mysticpete.com and Mystic Pete on social media. Stay tuned! In today's show, I interview Stefan Jacobs, a.k.a. Bossa. We'll start the show with a tune by Bossa called Solality, featuring Nectar de Astreas. And then after the interview, music by Bossa and Red Giant Project, Here It Comes. And after that, Bossa's tune called Mama Kia, featuring Monster Luna. And we wrap up the show with music by Gershwin, Rhapsody in Blue. Mystic Pete Chronicles. March 17th, 2023. Mystic Pete here with Stefan Jacobs, a.k.a. Bossa, B-O-S-A. Hey, Stefan.
What's up, buddy? It's so great to see you.
I guess we met when Petey Korn brought you to KXLU, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago?
I think it was 15.
Yes, or longer. And I immediately went, oh, this guy's got some energy. This guy's like kind of a buzzy kind of guy. Let's see what's going to happen with him. But I was very happy to meet you then. And you have proven truly a star. You've done so many projects. Been on my show a few times.
Yeah.
Talk to me.
Yeah, I've got a new record I've been working on that I'm really excited to share with people. And, you know, it's been a long process to get to this point with the new project. Because, as you know, I've mostly been producing under my own name, Stefan Jacobs. And I feel like this is a very strong art project that I've been developing. And now it's, like, really coming to fruition.
Contrast.
Yeah.
That's the name of this EP.
Yeah.
As Bossa.
Yeah.
People can find it on SoundCloud.
Yeah, or Spotify, all the things.
Okay, yeah. Social media.
Yeah.
Well, you're creative in a lot of different directions. You're a DJ, you're a producer, you've done playback for some very famous acts. Mm-hmm. In other words, you're the guy. Explain what that
is. Sure, yeah. I program the live show for a lot of A-list artists, such as like ASAP Rocky, Brockhampton, Snow Allegra, the list goes on and on and on. Sweetie, Run the Jewels.
So when they're on stage singing, you're the guy on the side making sure all the backing tracks are playing.
Or so all the playback, the multi-track out, the auto-tune, the time code, so all the visuals and lighting are synced up with the show. Even automation on stage sometimes is synced up with the playback through time code as well. It's a pretty technical job overall, but it just fits into my skill set with Ableton really well because I use it like a instrument or tool overall.
And when there's between 5 and 50,000 people in an arena, there cannot be any glitches.
Oh, yeah, totally. No, there's redundant systems and everything just set in place for that to not happen.
And they need really pro guys doing the technical aspects, so it's really a professional show.
Yeah.
That's what you've been doing.
Totally. I've been doing that for probably like 12 years now, like in parallel to doing my music career and, you know, having kids and all the things.
And you've worked with Henry Strange.
Tons. I still do.
And he developed a product.
Setlist and Tune Live, and also a new one coming out called Lyrics we've been working on.
So, a little local collab. Yeah. There's a lot of lights in Los Angeles, a lot of creative lights, really almost genius level, if not beyond. Is that possible? That may not really be known to the public yet, but we've all been see how I just included myself. We've all been working so hard a little bit in the caves and in the mountains and developing a lot of power. And sooner or later, this whole crew is just going to emerge in a really big way. Mm-hmm. So says I, Mystic Pete.
I think it's emerging now. I think in many ways that all the hard work and time that people have been putting in, especially from the pandemic, you know, I hate saying that, but like there's been... I feel like just the amount of time where people's art is kind of fruitioning to blossom.
So I have a kind of sensitive question. You're on stage with these very famous people.
Yeah.
And, you know, with a snap of their fingers, they can make you very famous. And I asked you a while back, well, can't you go to one of these stars and say, hey, I have a new album, I have a new song, can you, you know, put me on, make
totally.
Make me big? And you had a very interesting answer.
Yeah, no, that's a very good question and a real topic. And I think I hesitate to do it because a lot of my job is based on etiquette within that realm. And if I'm starting to be the guy like, hey, take a photo with me or check out my beats, like, I don't know, I guess I'm not the eager beaver. Sometimes I like to make sure that I'm still secure with my work, and that's still happening. So I tend to not. I've tried a little bit, but I might be too ginger about it.
So it's like you're on a set with George Clooney and you're an extra and you hand George Clooney your script.
Yeah, I wouldn't probably, I'd probably be a higher up than an extra. Right. You know, it'd probably be more like, you know, assistant.
Or you're the sound guy. Yeah, or they like.
Exactly.
But still, it's just like as soon as you do that, it's just awkward and suddenly it shifts the professional relationship.
Yeah.
So it's, even though you're very close to superstardom, there's like a lot of rules and protocol in place, so you can't, I'm just trying to explain this for people.
No, absolutely. It's all etiquette. It's like tour etiquette, you know, just etiquette working with the other artists, you know. They're not hiring you to ask them to give you beats. They're not hiring you to ask them to take photos with you, in my opinion, you know. So I personally draw that line, and that's why I'm just kind of like, I'm doing my own lane, you know. I'm making a sound of music that's not even really like that. Anyways, I think it'd be great to feature them on the style that I'm doing and it'd be like a real collab, but I'm not going to be like begging them to do it because then I might not get called to work, you know, and I have two kids.
Right. To you, it's a job. Yeah. And you have to protect the job and people have to understand about stardom. You know, when you're ASAP Rocky or something, somebody like that, everybody is coming up to you constantly wanting you to do your magic on them.
Yeah, totally.
And it's a distorted reality. You're like royalty. Yes, you can just wave your magic wand and anybody you want can be suddenly famous. Just be seen with them out in public or such.
Yeah.
So everyone is approaching these people like that. And it must be, at some level, completely irritating because you can't have a normal conversation. Who are your friends now? Yeah. Everybody, or they want your money, or they want your fame, or they, whatever, but it's not you anymore. So I guess as a professional, there is a certain diplomacy. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I just thought it was...
No, I think it's a good question, and it's real. I've been working in that realm for a really long time, and I actually think that's why I've worked in the realm for so long.
Yeah.
You know, I show my value in what I do, programming their sessions, making very complex ideas, and solving those problems for the artists and how to integrate it into their live shows, you know? I'm not there to be like, check out my beats or take a photo with me.
Well, I think that's a really good professional standard. Mm-hmm. And I think back to myself 15, 20 years ago when I was like producing a lot of bands and really trying to make it, and just kind of all the ass-kissing I did and trying to like hang around with the right people and all this stuff. And I look back and I go, none of that did anything for me. It was just like demeaning to me. Yeah. And nobody, like, that doesn't happen. Yeah. Nobody ever makes you famous, ever.
You got to put in the work. But I mean, it also goes against the saying, like, be bold in some ways, right? Like, you know, I'm not sticking my neck out and being like, check out my music. Like, you know, I'm just kind of doing my thing, you know.
I mean, that's the way. Reason I'm being so nice to you right now is because I know you're going to be super famous, and you, I want you to take my calls. Otherwise, right now you'd be talking to my secretary.
Well, I mean, I'm just putting all my love into the music, man. Ultimately, I want the music to speak for itself. That's kind of my bottom line overall. You know, I'm not the most social media person. I'm trying to incorporate it more into my daily life, but it's tough.
Well, this is one of the nice things about you. You're not all self-promotion-y, and we're so exhausted by this. Everybody marketing and promoting themselves, and they're all doing like whatever the latest coach tells you to do. So everybody's doing the same nonsense and garbage, and it just makes you look like a fool. Mm-hmm. But you don't get into that stuff. Mm-hmm. So, you're a musician. You're an artist. Yeah. And in this project called Contrast...
Yeah, this album, Contrast. I named it Contrast mostly because I feel like there's a lot of contrast between the songs. In particular, like, each one of them is a different language. So I've got a French song, a Swedish song, a Spanish song, and an English song on there. And the English one is pretty spiritual overall. But I think there is a nice contrast between the songs in that way. But it's all glued together by a vibe.
It has a very global vibe.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot happening. I would call it underground house, but you're working with Red Giant Project, Monster Luna, and other people. I mean, you're crossing a lot of thresholds and boundaries.
Yep.
It's almost like you're trying to connect with people beyond language and words.
That's really what it is. I mean, I feel like music is a spirituality for me. You know what I mean? And for me, that's when I feel closest to God in many ways, is when it's like coming through me and I'm just writing it. You know, I I feel as though like music is spirituality for me with my process and how I make music, and I don't know, I just want to incorporate that feeling of spirituality in my music, but not also cross into the line of like, oh, this is like transformational music, or this is hippie music, or, you know, it's more like along the lines of like Rufus or Zoo, but has this world kind of influence, and it's very intentional. Like, I've been producing for a long time now, so it's like I have the tools in the shed to kind of like create what I want, and I am. I'm taking much more of like a no holds barge, like, this is what I like, and fans, you're welcome to like it too, and, you know, I'm really creating for myself, I feel like, more so now than ever.
So you may not be so much of the crystals, yoga, meditation, sage, Birkenstock, hairy armpit crew. I don't know.
But they'll like it.
But your spirituality really is your music.
Yes.
So your creative process connects you with some kind of sacred reality.
I would agree with that, yeah.
And so when you're making music, I mean, I'm a creator, and sometimes I'm almost in a trance-like state.
That's exactly what I'm talking about, is when you get into that trance, when it's just like, it's happening on its own. You're just the co-pilot.
And when does that happen, or describe that? Is that when you're DJing, or when you're putting...
More so when I'm in the studio and just kind of letting the flow happen. You know, and just allowing it and not feeling like any pressure for anything to be a certain way other than the way I want it to be. Not really taking too much, you know, advice, I guess. You know, and it's interesting to say that, but I want to be really, like, unwavering in my integrity with my music, more so than ever. And even all the new stuff I'm working on, too, it's like, you know, this is a sound I think is going to, you know, really be something people want to hear.
Interesting about the modern-day shaman. You may not be leading a dance around a fire circle, but you're in front of your computer with very high levels of technology and somehow entering some similar trance state, which then induces trance states in other people when they listen a day, a month, a year, 10 years later.
Totally.
That's where a lot of spirituality is, and I think we need to recognize this is a bona fide vehicle, and it doesn't all have to be when we're covered with mud and rolling in goat dung, which I've done many times.
Well, I mean, I'm not saying that it's the spirituality. Like, there's all kinds of spirituality. I think an artist feels it too when they're painting and they just, like, let the brush take over. You know, it's kind of the same. It's that tapping into that spirituality to create the music. And I feel like that's why there's the Bossa project that I work on, and then I still have my self-named project, you know, and that's like more
face. Stefan Jacobs.
Yeah, totally. I still have some tracks. I focus that more on like the A-list stuff and the hip-hop stuff I do and bass music stuff, but like the stuff that comes out in the sound, I just call it Bossa.
Bossa.
Yeah.
B-O-S-A.
Yeah.
I have another show called In a Dream, and that features the DJ community, so every week I'm playing, you know, the best DJ tracks I can come up with. And I must say, and I hope I don't alienate all of my guests on that show, but you know, the house scene is a little bit played out. I mean, you start to hear the same things over and over, and you have like AI programs that can create house tracks that are better than actual human beings. So it's an interesting place, but I really like what you did on Bossa is you're moving the genre ahead. You're putting a lot of stuff together, and I think this is very important for producers these days. You have to do new things. You got to cross new, and the best sets that I'm playing these days on my other show are DJs who are taking risks and doing things they're not supposed to do.
Innovators break rules.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the rules are to be broken, but it's good to have the fundamentals of them.
There you go. But it's back on you as an artist to make it sound good. I mean, you got to do something new, but it has to also be, you know, very accessible and appealing.
Yeah. Well, I think that my sound in particular is very rooted, it's deeply rooted in my process, you know, and how I go about making tracks, because I kind of went from making like hip-hop and bass music and dubstep and knowing how to do all that and having like a revelation, a couple of them. I on ayahuasca, one of my friends specifically said, my friend Mark, he's like, I feel like your music changed a lot after you did ayahuasca. And I don't disagree. I kind of noticed there's a certain... I know where it kind of started. It was kind of like after the Colors of the Sun track. That was one of the first ones after I did ayahuasca. It's a track I did with Ahi. And it's just more...
Ahi!
Yeah.
His star is rising.
Totally. He's crushing it. I love him. He's such a good dude. But that track, it just also feels more worldly and rooted in kind of like a grounded place. And that's just more of the angle I've been going. And then, you know, I also had some revelations about just like how I wanted to approach sound design and longevity of timeless music. And that's when I was like, okay, I think Bossa is going to be the project that's going to be more of a timeless sound, because I'm not trying to do like heavy bass sounds. Like, I'm trying to subtly do it and tickle the ear, but I'm not trying to be like, this is the track. It's just like sparkles.
Yeah, that's true. You're not going for the big banger sound. It's very seductive music.
Thank you.
I've listened to all the tracks several times already, and there's a lot happening. It is very artistic.
Thank you. Yeah.
And, you know, just touching back upon this notion of shamanism. Mm-hmm. Well, plant medicine has been a part of that inner journey for as long as there's been, like, we've been eating mushrooms or ayahuasca or this and that. So it's kind of part of the whole spiritual journey. Yep. For a lot of people.
Yeah.
So that's okay.
No, I'm not saying that, like, to do it or not to do it.
Yeah.
It was just...
It changed you.
It did. There were some things that changed in both how I, like, handle my family life and my music.
Could you put that into words?
Just how important it is, you know, to be there for your family, for your kids, for your lady, and really be a stand-up guy and have integrity, you know, because it's hard to raise kids, but you got to just be in it together, and complaining only adds to the problem, so, you know, no complaining.
Interesting. Well, that's kind of just a basic man-up kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nobody wants to hear you complaining, but I think going to the issue of psychedelics, it does kind of break away the crust or all the things you thought were important that are really trivial. It can help you see through to, like, what is important.
Yeah.
And all the tinsel and frosting, and it just afterwards it's like, how petty. Like, why are we here? What's the core stuff? So as an artist and as a father and as a husband, it really helped you sink into, like, these deeper flows.
Yeah, and I had to. It was kind of like the timing that I took it shortly after we had our first daughter, Luna. I better get my life together. And not that it was a mess by any means, but I just had to step it up and go harder into my music and harder into my family. And also it was a realization, like, You know, I've tried to do some startups and some business stuff, and it's like, I don't want to do that anymore. I just want to do my music, and I think that's my calling, and that's it.
I think I should inform the listeners that this show has been brought to you by Ayahuasca from Cetacean Creations, the makers of the finest... I'm kidding.
No,
this is all a joke.
No,
it's not brought to you by anybody. No sponsors. Non-commercial radio. So,
I mean, I've only done ayahuasca 2 times.
It's 2 times?
Yeah, it's not like I'm doing it every year. This was like 5-6 years ago.
Isn't that funny? And Terrence McKenna talks... I don't know why we got into this topic, yeah. But Terrence McKenna talks about people who will come up to him and tell him about this profound psychedelic experience they had once 50 years ago. You know, like, maybe all you need to do is one time.
Yeah.
But I'm actually totally sober these days.
When I
was a teenager, it may have had my little experimental phase, which was very important. Lastly, let's talk about the journey of the creative. And it's a really steep mountain. I've mentioned that nobody ever makes you famous. Win the lottery easier than waiting around for some mogul to tap you on the forehead and put you on top. So that leaves us with our own magnetism, our own charisma, but mostly our own creativity. And I think that people who think they're God's gift to the world and think they're all that and think they're like some incredibly brilliant performer, they're often people who don't work hard. And they rest on their laurels, and they miss out on opportunities that are down low. They're down in the roots and in next to the earth. And but people who are hungry, who are really, they take opportunities and they work hard on themselves. And I've seen you do this. I've seen you shed your skin several times and emerge with a new form, new ideas. And you are constantly working really hard. So you are climbing up that mountain.
I feel like I'm still doing it.
Yeah. Let's talk about that, the journey of the creative and how hard it is.
From the surface, you know, I don't think people realize how hard it is and how hard it's been. You know, I often feel like people assume things are a certain way. But, you know, it's still a struggle. I'm still hustling. I still got my life going on. I still got to provide for my family. I still want to push my music because my aspirations are for, like, my music to be my sole thing. And there was a time in my music when it was. But I departed from that sound and things happened in life. For also at being such a creative person to realize it come full circle to be like, oh, that's probably what I should have just done the whole time. And that's been the awakening for me the last couple of years. It's like, okay, I'm an artist, you know, and be truer and unwavering to my integrity with my artist vision and what I want to present to the world.
You keep working. You keep creating.
It's I was in the studio right before I came here.
Right.
I was working on a track.
Yeah. You just have to do it.
Yeah.
You never got another penny from it, you'd still be doing it.
I haven't gotten a lot of pennies from it, and I'm still doing it. You know, like, I'll spend 120 hours, 200, 300 hours on tracks by the time they're, like, really done, some of them. And it's, like, iterations, and they transform until they're where I want them to be. But, like, you know, the hourly rate on that, come on. You know, like, and people wonder why I get paid so much to DJ, why I hold the line. I'm like, yeah, I mean, I put thousands and thousands of hours. Like, you're coming to see me do my music.
It's not the 2 hours on stage.
Totally.
It's the 10,000 hours before that.
Yeah, 20,000.
Of course.
Yeah, totally.
That's a good point. Yeah, that comment has been made by, you know, like Rembrandt. It's not the week he spent on a picture. It's the thousands of hours he put in before that to be able to paint that picture.
And the quality, it speaks for itself. It's not quantity, it's quality.
Yeah.
Just like, go listen.
So the winners are those who don't give up on the creative journey.
Or at least they're enjoying the process along the way and they're doing what they love. And that's, to me, the most fulfilling part, and just kind of settling into that more. It's like, if this is what I'm doing, at least I'm happy. You know, it's dope if it blows up more and I'm, like, you know, headlining festivals around the world. But I'm also happy doing what I'm doing. And if I'm providing for my family, doing what I'm doing, the rest is a bonus.
So that is the whipped cream, but you're not celebrity obsessed. You're just going to be creative.
I don't think it's ever going to stop.
It hasn't.
Since the tap opened. You know, there's ebbs and flows. There's times I'm way more, you know, prolific, and there's times I feel like I forget how to write music.
Yeah.
You know, and then a day will come, and I'm like, oh, wait, that just came out of me. That's a dope track.
You ever, like, have a bad gig, and afterwards you go, yeah, I'm not a musician. What was I even thinking?
I've had so many bad gigs, man. I've been DJing for, like, 20 years. Right.
But after, like, a bummer gig, you just quit. But after a really good gig, you go, like, I'm Jesus Christ. No, totally. It's, like, such a high.
Yeah, I mean, I've tried to, like, curb expectations on gigs these days. Oftentimes, it's, like, the gig that I least expect is the one that's super crazy, or the gig that I expect to be super crazy is, like, the super whack gig, you know? And now I'm also at a place where I'm holding out. I'm not just trying to take shows. I want to take shows that represent my art and the way I want to represent it. And I'm developing that right now with a new live show. I'm developing, like, custom plugins just to achieve what I want to do with this stuff. Like, yeah, I build live shows for those guys, but watch out. I'm going tenfold on my own. Like, what I would have charged them to do what I've already done, I might not have even had the patience to do. But I'm so OCD for myself, like, I'm making custom plugins, custom stuff that, like, y'all gonna want.
I guess it's where you set the bar for yourself as a creative, like, whatever you're willing to stoop to. I mean, on the one hand, I said sometimes the opportunities are down low, but, you know, we've all taken gigs that we really regret that didn't represent ourselves well.
I mean, I heard a good quote recently on that. Kanye West said, it's like, you got to move on opportunity. And he's kind of right, you know, like, when the right opportunity presents itself, it might not be the greatest deal, but move on that opportunity because it might open the next door. And that's kind of the philosophy I've been working on now. Like, I have a big opportunity that's on the plate right now, and I just signed a contract. I'm not going to say it on this, but it's a single coming out on, like, a big label. And I just had to take it, you know? I'm not going to say if the deal was good or bad, but I had to take it because it's a great opportunity. And at the same time, it goes against, like, playing for exposure. It's not like that. It's bigger opportunities, stuff that will transcend a night at a bar, you know, like, was a big opportunity.
Oh, well, you know, in that case, we're going to do a little gig in my garage in a few minutes with some neighbors. I hear there's some real influential people going to be there. It might be a good opportunity for you.
Yeah, yeah, that's not the kind of opportunities I'm talking about. I'm talking about, like, opportunities that could...
We've all heard that one. Oh, some big people are going to be there.
Yeah, I've heard that many times. Or, like... Geez. It's going to be great. Get a part of the door.
Good option for you. Stefan Jacobs, a.k.a. Bossa, with your new EP called Contrast, out on all the socials.
Yeah, on Alpha Pup Records. Yeah.
Right on.
Thank you very much, Mystic Pete. It's always great to see you.
I'll call your secretary for the next one.
No, you've got my direct.
Boom.
Always. VIP.
the end of the Mystic Pete Chronicles. You can reach me at mysticpete.com and Mystic Pete on social media. Today, an interview with Stefan Jacobs, a.k.a. Bossa. We started the show with Bossa's tune, Solality, featuring Nectar de Estrellas. After the interview, Bossa and Red Giant Project, Here It Comes, featuring M. Then Bossa's tune, Mama Kia, featuring Monster Luna. And we just wrapped things up with Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue. That was Leonard Bernstein and the Columbia Symphony Orchestra. We'll be back next week with the best of talk radio. Mystic Pete out!